broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Thursday, March 11th. We have several items on our agenda, and my intent is to take the items in the order that they appear on the posted agenda. The informational meeting, then a public hearing on 2447, then a public hearing and work session on 2607, followed by a work session on 2341. So if you're interested in any of those, that's the order that we are planning on following, at least for right now. We have a roll call, please.
Representative Levy.
Here by video.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
Let's wait a few minutes.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
And Representative Smith Warner is excused, and Madam Chair Nathanson.
Present by video. Thank you all. I'm opening an informational meeting, Oregon Historic Property. Mr. Alanak, could you tell us what we're going to hear?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Chrissy Curran is from the Parks Department, is here to walk through a description of the historic property program that they administer. And this is a prelude to a bill that was heard on the Senate side that may be coming your way. So this is kind of a heads up of coming attractions related to a property tax exemption.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, my name is Chrissy Curran. I am a deputy director for Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and as well as the director of the State Historic Preservation Office. I am going to talk with you a little bit about a special assessment for historic property program. I do have some slides, but I'd like to have you wait to look at them until I'm done talking, or you won't, trust me, you will not listen to anything I'm saying because they're such awesome pictures and way better than my voice. So I am going to
And Ms. Curran, I'm going to interrupt for a moment and welcome Representative Smith to the meeting. Make sure that's noted.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I apologize, I was a little late. I got stuck in Ways and Means.
That sounds like a place to get stuck. Go ahead, Ms. Curran.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Administered by the Oregon State Historic Preservation Office, or SHPO, the Special Assessment of Historic Property Program is the first historic preservation incentive of its kind in the country. Established in 1975 by the 58th Legislative Assembly, the Special Assessment Program is best described as a 10-year property tax assessment exemption for owners of commercial and residential properties listed in the National Register of Historic Places, individually or within a district. Improving historic properties can cost more than non-historic ones because owners are replacing materials in kind, so wood instead of something like vinyl, and hiring specialized contractors who understand older construction and detailing, which is necessary, but rarely the lowest bidder. Exempting the tax assessment increases that a large improvement project would trigger helps level the playing field for owners of historic buildings, encouraging reinvestment. And like I said, at the end of my remarks, I will spin through a few slides showing you what that reinvestment looks like in Oregon's communities. First, a little bit more about how the program works and who is using it. Owners prepare a preservation plan, which is approved by SHPO staff. Once certified, expenditures equal to 10% of the real market value of the property must be spent on approved projects within the first 5 years. Coordination with local governments ensures design review, and county assessors review calculations for accuracy. Owners report on the status of their projects in the third, sixth, and ninth years of the benefit. Property taxes for qualified properties rise annually 3% as prescribed by Measure 50, in addition to applicable levies or bonds, but owners do not get reassessed on their improvement work until the end of the 10-year period. Many folks recognize this program by the open house that used to be a feature of the program. That is no longer a feature of the program. It was removed in 2009. The property is removed from special assessment at the end of the 10-year term and is reassessed at current values. Applicants can qualify for a second 10-year term if their plan includes significant investment in seismic upgrades, energy conservation, or universal access. Following the second 10-year term, the property can no longer qualify. There are currently 401 active certifications. 49% of those are private residences, 51% are commercial buildings. We had 12 new certifications last year, 75% of which were commercial. Active certifications are spread throughout 23 counties. Multnomah County contains the most by far at 207, followed by Deschutes at 28, Clatsop with 24, Marion with 22, and Lane with 19, wrapping up the top five. Jackson and Lynn counties each have 18. These numbers make sense as they reflect those counties with the most historic districts in the state. In its 44 years of existence, the special assessment was reauthorized once, allowed to sunset, reestablished, reauthorized four more times, and been the subject of two governor-appointed task forces and two working groups, multiple reports and studies, and three additional housekeeping bills along the way. In the 1990s, Measures 5 and 50 ushered in controls on tax rates and caps on assessed value, directly affecting how special assessment was calculated, diminishing its impact, and creating unpredictabilities around the actual benefit to property owners. And we see this in our statistics. We actually have a 26% decrease in active certifications just in the past 10 years. In addition, as our means of tracking this program gets better and better, it has become clear that the program is not meeting the needs of most residential property owners, particularly outside of urban areas. Spending thresholds and upfront cash requirements make it difficult for those with modest means and smaller projects to participate, and that concerns us. Out of the 23 counties I mentioned earlier, 17 of them have active certifications only in the single digits. We have access and inclusivity problems with the current program. The special assessment program, as I mentioned, has been reauthorized five times since 1975, typically for 10 years at a time. In 2019, this agency requested a shorter extension so we could come back to the legislature with a better program. The program received a two-year extension at that time, and the agency has responded by proposing several program improvements reflected in Senate Bill 108, which will be coming your way eventually. The results of an online survey we conducted last summer affirmed what we've known for a while. Number one, the program is designed to work best with buildings that need a lot of work, and participants need to have upfront cash to spend. Residential owners tend to engage in ongoing, discrete projects such as windows and doors, foundations, plumbing and electrical, super important projects, roofs, that kind of thing. It's really hard for those projects to meet the spending threshold, and the time frame, which is 10 years, is too short to achieve much tax benefit. The second thing we learned is after evolving over the years to adjust to changing tax laws and assessment rates, the program remains most beneficial to commercial property owners and to commercial property rehabilitation projects, as was originally intended by the founders of the program in 1975. Commercial owners tend to engage in the short-term, comprehensive rehabilitation work that produces the beneficial return the program is designed to achieve. It leverages smoothly with the federal historic tax credit for income-producing properties, as well as the state's Main Street Revitalization Grant Program, causing reinvestment to happen where it otherwise would not have occurred. Also, counties get the most bang for their buck with income-producing properties participating in the program. While almost 50% of the 401 current participating properties are private residences, they contribute less than 6% of the total projected expenditures on planned projects. So we're looking at $31,359,777 out of $538,068,929. Given that commercial projects account for 94% of the reinvestment generated by the program, it seems like it's in the best public interest to explore a commercial-only approach, which is a feature of Senate Bill 108. And I didn't plan to go into a lot of detail on Senate Bill 108 unless you want me to. I can. But at this point, I would like to show you some pictures of some recent rehabilitation projects that have been conducted under the special assessment program. And I think we have a PowerPoint. So I've got some before and after pictures. There we go. This is the Beauchamp Building in Staten. And as you can see, both the first and second floors stories received a major rehabilitation. And next slide, please. I have 10 slides. This is the Haskell Building in Baker City. This is primarily first story rehabilitation. Next slide, please. The Fry Durkheimer House in Portland. Next slide, please. The YMCA building in Astoria. This actually won Oregon Heritage Excellence Award. Next slide, Hot Lake Hotel in Union. Next slide. The Grand Central Bowl, I could not find an old picture of that that was color, but I think this picture tells the whole story. All you need to know about what they did to it back in the 60s. Next slide, please. The Thompson Roach Building in Eugene, otherwise known as Max's Tavern and Little's Market. Next slide. Cohen House in Portland. Next slide. And this is my last slide, the Raphael Building in Cottage Grove. And those are the images I have, and I would be happy to answer any questions you have about the special assessment program.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Deputy Director Corinne. My question is, we just saw 10 photos. Are the renovations also on the inside or just on the exterior of the buildings?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Reschke, thank you for your question. It does differ. The program requires a significant amount of exterior work, but interior work can count if it is with regard to what we call character-defining features. So those features inside the building that contribute to its significance.
Thank you.
Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I wanted to ask a couple questions, but first, can you tell me what the revenue impact or how much, what the revenue impact is of these historic property 10-year exemptions?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Pham, no, I can't, and there's a reason. This is a very complex calculation that occurs. under the special assessment. And there's a reason that the Department of Revenue actually co-administers this program per statute. And we track a lot of things in this program at the preservation office, but we do not count the loss of revenue by the counties. It is just something that we really can't track very well. It's always been it's a very complex calculation. I believe that the counties track it, but it might be that we need to check in with revenue and see if they can get us a closer number. I'd be happy to do that and bring it back to you.
Thank you.
Representative Levy.
I just have a comment on the Hot Lake renovation. I'm very, very familiar with it. It used to be a sanitarium where my grandfather, when my grandmother had a stroke, my grandfather got really sick from the stroke, and they put my grandfather in the sanitarium to get him well while my grandmother was in another portion of it so that they would be close by. And then it was renovated by somebody else after it left that scenario. And then it's at its present state, and it used to be a group of artists that still probably own portion of it, but they're from up in the Wallawa area, and I went to school with their children. So it's a very beautiful building, very beautiful, and they've just reopened it, I believe, to have part of it. They have a little tiny restaurant and a hotel as part of it as well.
Thank you for sharing that. Ms. Curran, could you please back up to the beginning of the explanation? It seems from looking at the photos that the intent is not to build back or improve back exactly the way something looked. It seems that preserving generally the character must be part of the requirements or the intent. Is the intent really more on preserving architectural character and history, or on preserving viability of the structure to be useful for any purposes for the community?
Chair Nathanson, thank you for that question. In the preservation world, there's a big difference between restoration, preservation, and rehabilitation. And this really is a rehabilitation program. So we're not looking to make museums out of working buildings. We're museums are wonderful and serve their purpose. This program is really to ensure the viability and the long-term success of historic buildings, and also preserving those character-defining features that most tell the story. So it is, we follow the same filtering system as the National Park Service, which is the Secretary of Interior standards for rehabilitation. And those are pretty flexible because their goals are the same as our goals with this program, which is we're not looking to create picture perfect images of what was there before, but to keep as much as we can and keep the building livable.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I do want to add to the previous comment. I have a historic building in downtown La Grande on Adams Street, and it went through a pretty extensive renovation. It is important to note, as part of the standards, the colors, windows, lighting do have to meet certain standards in order to qualify for this allowance. And correct me if I'm wrong, Madam Deputy Director, is there also a requirement for an annual open house?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Smith, that requirement disappeared in 2009. It was too hard to track. There were security issues with it. No other special assessment in the state has such the same kind of a requirement. So it is gone. It is no longer there. And
I've been allowing strangers in my place for 12 years.
You don't have to do it anymore since 2009.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, Ms. Kern, I was curious. First of all, I want to say I appreciate your analysis, the two-year study that your program went through to make sure that we're making the most out of this program and reaching the goals of the program. And I appreciate the recommendation that it be moved to a commercial-only exemption. One of the things that I have been noticing in this time when we're living in this past year where, you know, many historic monuments are being questioned, and people are starting to raise questions about whose history is being preserved. I know in Portland, we have many neighborhoods that used to be very vibrant neighborhoods in the past to, for example, like the Albina neighborhood that has been a historically Black neighborhood for decades and offers really rich cultural history of Oregon. I recently found out in the redistricting committee that the Chinese population made up 10% of Oregon's population at the turn of the century, which is mind-boggling. Can you tell us about some of the thinking of the Historic Preservation Program in terms of as we think about new histories and new voices and questioning the stories that we're telling? I'd love to hear some of your thoughts about how the program can reflect and better reflect some of those stories.
Chair Nathanson, Representative Pham, that's a very important thing to bring up. And I will say, at least with regard to the special assessment program, to qualify for special assessment, a building has to be listed in the National Register of Historic Places. So that program is under intense scrutiny for its the way it's accessed by all individuals across the country, and what kind of properties are regularly being designated. That program, those properties come to us. So nominations come to the SHPO. We don't go out and find nominations unless we embark on specific projects to help make it easier for the public to nominate properties of underrepresented communities and untold stories in Oregon. So we have done a few things at the SHPO to encourage that. And we applied for and received a $30,000 grant from the National Park Service to engage with the Oregon Black Pioneers to write a multiple property nomination in a sense, an umbrella document that tells the story of the Black community in Oregon. It's a statewide project. And then underneath that, it will be easier for the public to nominate properties in their communities that they think are important to the National Register of Historic Places, which then makes them eligible for these other kinds of benefits. And we are continually on the lookout for projects and collaborations and programs that help us continue to lead out with that kind of work. I would also say that while historic preservation has been attached to words like gentrification and cultural displacement, those things are very complex issues. And in lots of ways, there are many other things that cause those things to happen and that have been happening for decades. And it's really the way a city policies and development practices respond to preservation and to the improvement in a neighborhood that really can make the difference between a really engaging community and something that becomes gentrified for the folks who have been living there for a long time. So historic preservation can be a very valuable tool to tell as an antidote to cultural displacement, and it especially is useful when the people living in those communities have a say in what happens to their, in the development practices that happen in their neighborhood. It has to be a shared authority, essentially, with neighborhood, long-term neighborhood residents and what happens to their community.
Ms. Curran, I really appreciate your full explanations and comments. This informational meeting is a very important background information for us in considering a particular tax policy that we'll be considering. But if someone had additional questions or issues related to the program in a larger sense, as a policy issue, what is the appropriate means of accessing SHPO, State Historic Preservation Office, or the appropriate legislative committee where usually the broader issues of the program would be discussed?
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, the SHPO is located in Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and we are the red phone for this program and for all other state issues regarding archaeology and historic preservation. As far as the legislative committee, I know that it had a Senate Bill 108 had a hearing in the Senate Revenue Committee on Monday. I'm not an expert on sort of the path it takes from there, but the actual special assessment program, certainly the State Historic Preservation Office, me, we have several other staff people who work on this program as well. I will say that there are a lot of pieces to this program that we don't track, as I mentioned to Representative Pham earlier. And people, there sometimes we really do have to tell people you need to talk to your tax attorney, you need to talk to your county assessor to ensure that this is the best benefit for you or that it will actually work out properly for you. So that is sort of, I guess, it's a multi-component program, but if we don't have the answer, we will certainly show people where they can go to get that answer. And in addition, our legislative analysts put my contact information at the end of the slide PowerPoint and the two-pager as well that we submitted.
Thank you. Mr. Alanak, is there any other material to cover before I close the informational meeting?
I don't think so, Madam Chair. I think Jamie might talk about the cost of the program, because that's in the tax expenditure report, to get at Rep. Pham's question.
And that will come up when we open the public hearing?
On 2447, I think. I don't want to put Jamie on the spot, but we can look that up. There is an estimate provided in the tax expenditure report to Rep. Pham's question.
Okay, thank you. We'll get to that when we're hearing the specific bill. Otherwise, we're very happy to hear about the program generally, how it works, and its history. Very interesting. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question is just to make sure some of my notes are correct, that there are 401 properties currently in this program, and 51% of them are private. Is that correct?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Reschke, yes, that is correct.
Okay, and a follow-up question, Madam Chair?
Sure.
And after the 10 years, if you do not reapply or accept it back in for another 10-year exemption, then your property is assessed at real market value. Is that correct?
The property is reassessed after the term ends. And so it's reassessed at the real market value. It's not cumulative, so they just go out and they assess it as is. And that's what the assessment ends up being.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. I'm closing the, Representative Pham, I'd like to move on to the bill. Did you have a final question about the program? Oh, we can't hear you.
Quick question. Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. I just wanted to confirm that even though commercial certifications make up 51% of the certifications, private residential make up 49% of the certifications, they make up only 6% of the actual revenue. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Chair Nathanson, Representative Pham, they make up 6% of the proposed expenditures in the program, the projected expenditures.
Thank you.
Ms. Curran, would you please send to our committee, you can do it by sending to Legislative Revenue Office, links to the appropriate pages that are publicly available that describe the details of the program?
Absolutely, Chair Nathanson.
Thank you. At this time, I'm closing the informational meeting. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2447.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, this is Jamie McGovern for the Legislative Revenue Office. House Bill 2447 deals with the Historic Property Special Assessment Program and essentially would just move out the sunset date the program as it stands right now, so not any changes, but move out the sunset date from 2022 to 2028. And it's a very short one-page bill.
Thank you. Committee, questions for Ms. McGovern about the program, and this might be a good time to ask additional questions about revenue impact or assessment or value on the property and percentages of who's taking advantage of it. I don't mean individual names, but what types of properties. Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize. I misunderstood that the hearing. So I would like to take this opportunity now to ask about the revenue impact. And if you could share analysis about the properties that Chair Nathanson just mentioned, just to give us a clearer sense of who's actually taking advantage of this program at this moment.
Representative Pham, Chair Nathanson, I apologize that I am not able to provide the makeup of the individual properties on the program. I think I'd have to speak a little more with Chrissy and do some more background work on that. I have been doing some work on that for the Senate bill. For the revenue impact, I can say that the most recent tax expenditure puts that at $17 million for the biennium. And I think that I also have... when I say that there's a $17 million loss, that on top of that, there's also a shift to other taxpayers of $5.2 million. So that's over a two-year period. So that would give some idea of the impact of the program.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Sure.
Can you explain to me more what the shift of $5.3 million to other taxpayers entails?
Representative Pham, Chair Nathanson, of course. So what happens in general, if we think about our property tax system in Oregon, if there is a special assessment or if there's a tax exemption on a property, what that does is that if you kind of lump those two together, it changes the value of the property on which the taxes are being imposed or assessed. And so That might mean that, for instance, if you get a tax exemption or a special assessment and you get a lower value on your property than you otherwise would have, you're going to be paying lower taxes. Now, the way that we have set up in Oregon with Measure 5 and Measure 50, we have a rate-based system, which means you're only paying on the, you're paying a rate on the base, which is the value of your assessed value of your property. That being said, if a local government has a budget that is maybe higher than all of the money that would be collected under the permanent rates of our tax system, that money may not be made up through permanent rates on other taxpayers. However, in local jurisdictions, individual local governments, taxing authorities can choose to attempt to pass a bond by the vote of the people, or there can sometimes be local option levies. And so in the case of bonds, if the bonds are approved and an individual taxpayer has a reduction in their assessed value or a tax exemption, instead of that money being lost to the local government, the total amount of the bond still has to be paid on an annual basis, or the payments on the bond. And so what happens is that bond is sort of divvied up or allocated amongst the remaining taxpayers for the value of the property. So that bonds are actually in our system as a levy base, whereas the permanent rates are on a rate base. That may be of a long-winded response to your question, but I hope that adds some clarity. And Chair Nathanson, if you would permit me, I have a little bit of additional information to add to Director Curran's response to Rep. Reschke's question.
That's great. Thank you.
Representative Reschke, members of the committee, Chair Nathanson, on the question of what happens after 10 years, Ms. Curran is exactly right that the property is reassessed. What happens in all of our reassessment in Oregon is we have the real market value, but in any local area, the county CPR, which we looked at with the property tax, which is essentially the ratio, I'm glossing over a little bit, the ratio of assessed values to real market values throughout the county. So a lot of times that number is say 0.7 or 0.65. That would be multiplied by the real market value to get a new assessed value for the property. So there's a little bit of mechanics that go into that at the reassessment date.
Follow-up question, Madam Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
All right, thank you. And so Ms. McGovern, just so I'm clear, it's not a one-to-one ratio of assessed market value to real market value at the end of 10 years. It would be the assessed value would be multiplied times whatever that county or that jurisdiction's ratio is to get to the new assessed value. And then from there, we'd move forward.
That's correct, Representative Reschke.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. McGovern, could you please tell us a little bit more about how this program has been working. You mentioned a $17 million impact, I think, as a current estimate. That is the program as it exists, which is residential and commercial. Is that correct? So given that, is the program capped in any way? Does it grow and shrink in sometimes unpredictable ways? What if there's a lot of interest in any given year, and maybe there's more financial assistance available that's made by other organizations, nonprofits or whatever, to help with this? Is it possible that the program could grow more than just a traditional growth curve?
Chair Nathanson, I am not aware of caps on the program. I am somewhat familiar with the staged application process. And as it currently sits, I believe that you can make an application, but once you make the application, you still have some time to get a certification process approved through, and your property listed on the historic preservation as a historic preservation landmark. The rest of your questions, I'm going to have to do a little bit of homework to get back. And as I mentioned, touch base maybe with some administrators of the program. I think in recent years, I have been able to find the data on the historical movement of the program in terms of revenue. But I just want to be a little bit more careful and clear to get back to you.
Oh, that's fine. Thank you. This is just the initial discussion that we're in a public hearing, and we can receive additional information at a later time if the committee wants to continue working on this bill. Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to just follow up on this does HB 2447 incorporate the recommendations from the special assessment program that it only include commercial, or does it just extend the exact same program?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Pham, the only impact of HB 2447 is to extend the current program to 2028. So there would be no changes that would restrict that to commercial only or income producing only properties, because the current program allows for residential properties as well. And so that would be continued under 2447.
And I'm gonna step in now for a minute. We still have one person signed up to testify on the bill. We'll get to that in a moment. Mr. Alanak, could you please explain to us though the process? We have this bill, which is a pretty straightforward, just extension of a sunset. However, it's already been mentioned that there is a Senate bill which would change the program. Could you explain for the committee what the process is if the Senate does pass that bill, how that interacts then with us having this bill in front of us?
Certainly, Madam Chair. So basically the legislature, the Parks Department, the executive branch have come forward with program changes, as you heard Deputy Director describe. It's up to the legislature on whether you want to continue the program and under what circumstances or what conditions you want to continue the program. You could do anything from not hearing any bill, the program would go away. You could enact something like 2447 that would simply extend the program. Or if Senate Bill 108 makes it out of the Senate and onto your side, then you'd be able to consider, that would set the table for considering those program expansions. So in this, you basically have the whole gamut.
Thank you. I'm gonna move to the witness list now for the public hearing. We have one person signed up to testify. That's Christine Curran.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, again, my name is Christine Curran, and I am the director of the State Historic Preservation Office. And I, frankly, the only reason I signed up to testify was just to answer any clarifying questions. It sounds like Jamie McGovern did a great job. So the differences between the Senate Bill 108 and the House bill, that was the only reason. Do you have any additional questions for me? I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you. Committee, any questions for Ms. Curran? Rep. Pham.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Curran, I would actually appreciate any distinctions between this bill and Senate Bill 108, as you mentioned. Could you provide that explanation?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Pham, there are a few administrative changes to the program that we have proposed in Senate Bill 108. By and large, I'm going to just mention the main differences. Senate Bill 108 limits the program to income-producing properties, as we mentioned before. It extends the program to 2031, and we did that simply because it's always been a 10-year extension. It didn't really mean anything more than that. It eliminates the Historic Assessment Review Committee, which is the appeals body for this program, and sends any appeals to a contested case judge. And importantly, it eliminates the 10-year participation terms so that qualified owners can use the program as often as they need it in 10-year increments with the reassessment and the CPR ratio. That is why I don't do revenue in between. So what we're seeing happen is that historic properties that have used this program for two terms back in the 80s are now 30 years older, and they don't have any incentive left to them. So that is why we proposed that change. We also clarified the date of application, and we have proposed that properties actually be listed in the National Register of Historic Places at the time of certification. We've had some pushback from developers on that element, and we completely understand their concerns. So those are sort of, in a nutshell, the main changes.
And if the bill makes it to us, we'll be able to dig into that a little deeper. I'd like to note for either you, Ms. Curran, or Legislative Revenue Office, that if the bill comes to us, I'll want to be sure that we're real clear on what is meant by income producing. For example, if a home is converted then into rental property, does it fall into the category of eligible? So that's an example of the kind of question I'd have if that bill comes to us. Any other questions for Ms. Curran? Thank you again for being with us. Manny, has anyone else signed up to testify? Anyone else on the witness registration list?
No, Madam Chair.
I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2447. I'm opening a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2607. And Mr. Alanak, could you or LRO, please start with a brief explanation? This is a little bit different than our usual procedure, since we're opening a work session concurrently with the public hearing, but this has been heard in another committee. So could you help describe that for us?
Sure, Madam Chair. Before Dave jumps in with the bill, just from a policy or a procedure question, because it is a little bit unusual for the House Revenue Committee to have a public hearing and work session at the same time. The exception is that this bill has already been heard in a different committee and has been sent over to House Revenue and is connected with House Bill 2341, which is why the bills are set up this way. And then Dave should be able to give the details of the bill.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2607 comes by way of the House
session. Sorry, you need to say your name first.
Okay.
And I haven't been asking everyone else to do that. I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's all right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Dave Beck, Legislative Revenue Office. House Bill 2607 comes by way of the House Special Committee on Wildfire Recovery with the unanimous yes votes, all 10 members voting yes. And also the committee heard several supporting testimonies. House Bill 2607 exempts from construction taxes imposed by school districts residential housing being constructed to replace residential housing on the lot or parcel of the land that was damaged or destroyed by wildfire or another specified emergency event or circumstance. This exemption applies to residential housing damaged or destroyed on or after January 2020 The bill takes effect on the first, on the 91st day following adjournment signing day. By the way, step measure summary describes the history of construction tax imposed by school districts, the origin of it, and changes over time. Just briefly, according to the Department of Education, 64 school districts imposed a total of $26 million construction taxes in the school year 2018-19. That's the latest data we have. School districts may use construction tax proceeds only for capital improvements. We have revenue impact and we have fiscal impact ready. That's all I have, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Committee, any questions for Mr. Beck before we go to our witness list? I don't see any questions at this time. I'm ready to move to the witness list. We have one person signed up to testify on House Bill 2607. Is Representative Gomberg with us?
Yes, Co-Chair. I trust you can hear me.
Yes.
Very good. Well, for your record, I am David Gomberg, State Representative from the sunny Central Coast, House District 10. Very pleased to be with you here today. Thank you for your courtesy in hearing and providing a work session on 2607, which, as you have heard, is one of two bills forwarded to you from the Special Committee on Wildfire Recovery. This measure deals with construction excise taxes. And although you have the background in your record, I will simply provide for you a very brief summary that back in 2007, the legislature in their wisdom chose to allow school districts, if they wanted to apply a construction excise tax on new construction to deal with the growth needs that would result from new developments within their jurisdiction. They don't have to apply it, but they have the option to apply it. Now, Madam Chair, that worked perfectly well from 2007 on until 2020 landed on us with a thud. And at that point, 3,000 or more homes across Oregon were destroyed in one of our worst wildfire seasons on record. And as people began to work their way out of those wildfire situations and began to look toward recovery and rebuilding, they then suddenly began to learn that there were a lot of questions about what kinds of expenses they might face. And in particular, there was a question about whether they would face the construction excise tax and whether governments had the ability to waive it. As I'm sure you'll understand, and I'll say this respectfully, but if you get two lawyers together, you often get three opinions on what the facts are. And when I try to understand what the legal consequences are of legislation, I turn to legislative counsel. And counsel explained to me that school districts don't have to apply this construction excise tax, but when they do apply it, they must apply it uniformly, which is to say they have to apply it to everyone. Now, I will say to you that in response to the wildfires, some districts chose nonetheless to waive the tax. In fact, most of them chose to waive the tax, but it remains unclear whether they have any responsibility or liability for making that well-intentioned decision. What kind of money are we talking about here? Most of the homes that were destroyed during the September fires were manufactured homes, and replacing a typical manufactured home, the construction excise tax would total about $1,500. I will tell you that I went back and checked with the original sponsor of the excise tax in 2007, Ryan Deckert, who many of you know, and it was his opinion that the measure was not intended to be applied in response to rebuilding when a disaster occurred. He thought that districts should have some flexibility, but many sources, including our legislative council, believes that is not the case. While we were in the wildfire committee, a good Representative Post, who's very concerned about emergency clauses, was curious why this measure does not have an emergency clause, it would seem that we'd want to implement it immediately rather than 90 days after Sine Die. You will see in the measure that I took a different tact and said that this new statute would be retroactive to January 1st, 2020, so that it would cover taxpayers impacted by the fire season last year. The final thing I would share with you, Madam Chair, is the measure is drafted in response to our wildfires, but also makes reference to other disasters resulting in a declared emergency. And my intention there was to make sure that in the future, should we suffer not only wildfires, but floods, earthquakes, tsunamis, or other declared disasters that destroy homes, that taxpayers would not have to necessarily face a construction excise tax if their local school districts chose to give them a waiver. Quite candidly, I'm not familiar with process when a policy committee has a subsequent referral of a measure to another policy committee, and I don't know whether the written testimony carries over from one committee to the other. But there is written testimony in the record from the Committee of Origin. You will see there supporting documentations from the Oregon Home Builders, from Commissioner Hall of Lincoln County, and Superintendent Gray of Lincoln County Schools, all who provided written testimony in support, and also who appeared in person to support the measure in committee. They are not here today, but I hope with their earlier support and with your consideration today that we can move this measure forward to the floor and off to the Senate. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Thank you for your testimony. Committee, any questions for the representative? Yes, Rep. Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Gomberg, thanks for working on this. Just two questions for you. One is, if it took an owner of a home that was destroyed in a wildfire 5 years to rebuild their property, would this still apply to them? There's no time limit between when you have to finish construction. I guess that's my first question.
Madam Chair, Representative Reschke, I believe that the waiver would still apply, but I can't say that with absolute certainty. I have not looked into that.
Okay. And a follow-up question, Madam Chair?
Yes.
And that is, Representative Gomberg, this doesn't affect state revenue in any ways. It's just the local school districts' construction excise tax. Is that correct?
Through the chair to Representative Reschke, that is correct, Representative. This money goes directly to local school districts, which they would use for capital construction.
Thank you.
I believe that there is a fiscal impact statement in the record, which indicates no fiscal effect.
All right. Thank you, Representative Gomberg, and Madam Chair, thank you.
Sure. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. let me begin by saying I'm strongly supportive of this initiative. I think it makes tremendous sense and is needed at this time in Oregon's history. I do have one quick question. Does this benefit pass through to a new owner? If my home burns down and I sell the property and someone comes on to acquires that property and now builds a new home, does the benefit pass through?
Again, through the chair to Representative Smith. Again, I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I believe it would largely be at the discretion of the local school district who is granting the waiver.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Reschke?
Madam Chair, my apologies for not taking it on my hand.
Anyone else have questions for Representative Gomberg? Representative Marsh.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. This is less of a question and more of a chime in. My local school district, the Phoenix Talent School District, sent out a day ago a copy of a resolution that they passed suspending the construction excise tax for residents who have been burned out through the Alameda fire. And I quickly texted Rep. Gomberg and said, can they do this? Is this legal? And he reminded me that this is the reason we have this bill. So it's important to pass the bill so that we know that school districts can do what they intend to do. And I think it's also a reminder to us, if I can editorialize for a moment, of the importance of supporting these school districts otherwise, because these are school districts that have by their very nature lost students who have been burned out of their homes in neighborhoods where the fires course through. So there are going to be other needs of those school districts, even as they step up to do the most generous thing possible to support homeowners.
Thank you for the comments. You were sort of signaling how you might intend to vote.
True.
Anything else while Representative Gomberg is with us as a witness? We are also in a work session now. If there are no other questions,
thank you, Chair Nathanson. Thank you very much, members of the committee. I will stand by while you consider what I regard to be a fairly simple clarifying measure. And if you choose to move it forward, I would be happy to take it to the floor on your behalf.
Thank you. Committee, would one of the vice chairs at this time like to move that we send the bill floor with a do pass recommendation?
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2607 be moved to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 2607 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? I'm not seeing any. Could we please have a roll call?
Representative Levy.
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Representative Pham was going to need to leave for a few minutes to be in another committee. She's excused right now.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. The carrier will be Representative Gomberg. Mr. Alanak, is there any other business before I close this public hearing and work session?
Nope, you can close that. Okay. Rep. Yeah.
And Representative Pham has not rejoined us in the last 60 seconds or so, is that correct?
I don't see her. If she comes back, you always have the option of suspending. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I'm closing this public hearing and work session. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2341.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, this is Jamie McGovern for the Legislative Revenue Office. House Bill 2341 comes to you from the House Special Committee on Wildfire Recovery. On February 1st, five people testified on this bill during the public hearing, and it passed out of that committee unanimously. House Bill 2341, as you may recall, authorizes the tax collector and county covered by state of emergency declared by the governor. due to fire act of God or authority of the governor under Emergency Conflagration Act, who knows or has reason to believe that property has been destroyed or damaged by fire or act of God to prorate taxes imposed on property. And I will just say that, you know, since we got into the last or the previous public hearing, which I was involved about taxes that were assessed, essentially what this does is in the current tax year for which taxes have been imposed, it allows the tax collector on destroyed and damaged property to prorate the taxes that are to be collected. And then following that property tax year, as we move into the next property tax year, it's almost back to business as normal. So the damaged property would be assessed, including what happened under the damage or the destruction from the wildfire. And only small things to note on the revenue impact statement is that the revenue impact statement, we've gotten some numbers from the counties. It really just captures the effects from this year's wildfire. And so there's no permanent effects since it's a one-year collections reduction from any particular natural disaster event. But since the measure is proactive, we may see tax collection reductions if there was a future disaster, such as an earthquake or other wildfire, because in any year where there was damage, there would be prorated tax collections going forward. And I'm happy to provide more information if you'd like.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. McGovern before we start our discussion? Would someone like to move this bill to the floor with a do pass recommendation?
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2341 be moved to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 2341 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Not seeing any right now. Let's have a roll call vote, please.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham is excused. Vice Chair Reschke?
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson?
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. The carrier will be Representative Marsh. Is that still a good idea? You willing to do this?
Yes, please.
Great. Great. That's all the business for this work session. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2341. Mr. Allenack, any other business before us this afternoon?
No, Madam Chair, you've completed your agenda. I think.
I see Representative Reschke's hand up. Yes, Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't know if we wanted to stand at ease for a moment to give Representative Pham chance to return to the meeting to vote, or if we were just going to leave her as excused for these votes.
I have not had a communication from her, but thank you for your courtesy. Let's stand at ease for a moment, and I'll see if I can find out if she's on her way back momentarily. Thank you.
You bet. There it is.
Thank you, everyone, for your patience, and thank you again to Representative Reschke. Representative Pham has rejoined the meeting. We have already voted on two bills in work session. At this time, I'd like to ask the committee if there's unanimous consent to allow Representative Pham to vote on the two bills that we handled earlier, 2607 and 2341. Is there unanimous consent?
Do we need to verbalize that?
I don't think so. I'll just wait to listen for an objection or a hand up or something. And I'm not seeing any hands up or hearing any objections. Thank you for that. Representative Pham, at this time, how do you vote on House Bill 2607?
I vote yes.
Thank you. And how do you vote on House Bill 2341?
I vote yes.
Mr. Alanak, have we dotted the I's and crossed the T's to record those votes?
Yes, Madam Chair, I think that suffices.
Okay. Thank you all. Is there any other business before the committee before we adjourn? See you next time. Bye. We're adjourned.